Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at Budget 2023, particularly in the realm of green technology and, of course, energy transition. This is because following the announcement by the Finance Minister, Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim, come also the Prime Minister, he argues that, or presented that Bank Negara will provide 2 billion ringgit funding in sustainable technology startups and enterprises, including those that implement low carbon practices. On top of that, Khazanah will provide 150 million ringgit to boost environmentally friendly projects, including supporting the carbon market as well as reforestation. And to top it up, we've seen how the Green Technology Financing Scheme, or GTFS, will be improved by increasing the guarantee value to 3 billion ringgit until 2025. On top of this, we've seen the Green Investment Tax Allowance, or GITA, and the Green Income Tax Exemption, GITE, until December 31st of 2025. This, on top of many more initiatives, are currently being seen and being implemented and executed under Budget 2023. Here to discuss this and more is the CEO of Nanotechnology Malaysia Berhad, Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad. Rizal, before we jump to all the items that I mentioned earlier, let's talk a little bit more about nanotechnology per se.
Sure.
You yourself have have witnessed the increase of the nanotechnology budget in this Budget 2023.
Sure.
I'm sure this bode a good signal, not just to the company per se, Nano Malaysia, but the industry as well. Do you feel that this government is serious about embracing ESG practices and is serious enough to allocate funds to make sure that all these initiatives, including energy transition, can be done in a timely fashion and, of course, being done well for this year moving forward?
Yeah, thanks. It's an honour to be here. Responding to your question, Percy, if you were to be very precise in terms of our bumped up budget for this year compared to last year, we saw an 11.7%. So last year we received about 17 million ringgit Malaysia. This year we are receiving 19 million. So that sends a very, very positive signal to our nanotech ecosystem, our startup and SME. It means a lot to them compared to what you just disclosed earlier, Khazanah, 150 million, so on and so forth. But in terms of how it translates into supporting our nation's transition, the green transition, towards carbon neutrality as early as 2050, reduction of greenhouse gas emission 45% as early as 2030. There are certain programs being put in place by the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation, and we are being given the honour and mandate to spearhead that movement from the technology innovation perspective before hitting the market for full deployment. I'll give you an example. In July, we'll be launching the Hydrogen Economy and Technology Roadmap. That will give us where we are now, all the way to 2050, the roadmap, the path, the facilitation, all the possible incentives afforded by government to support our country's migration from hydrocarbon-based economy towards a greener hydrogen economy, per se. At our level, then in Malaysia, we have already started executing and implementing some key projects and programs supporting the green transition. And that is reflected in terms of the government intent and seriousness towards spearheading this green agenda. I give you one example, our hydrogen eco-nano-me project. There's a nano there to show our relevance in terms of the hydrogen ecosystem and economy. Mm-hmm. And we are also given the trust by the EV Task Force, which is under the Secretariat of the Ministry of International Trade and Industry, mm-hmm. to look into creating and establishing a local ecosystem to produce key components to support the EV industry in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. When talking about key components, we're talking about batteries, battery management system. We may not be able to build cars, per se, the boat may have sailed, but if you control the key components, which represent 60 to 70% the cost of an EV vehicle, we are able to control the supply chain, at least regionally in ASEAN. And that also will support our greater good of regional green agenda, not just in Malaysia, but regionally. Because green agenda is not restricted by the boundaries of Malaysia. It has to be transactional basis.
You know, speaking about this idea of using technology and green agenda as the underlying factor towards improving everything, it's important for us to take note that the Ministry of Science and Technology and Innovation, the ministry that Nano Malaysia is under, has to work hand in hand with all the other ministries per se.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the Ministry of natural resources, environment and climate change. Only I'm talking about health, I'm talking about education, basically everything. Technology is the underlying factor to this. In fact, our conversation today is running on technology.
Correct.
Do you feel that because of this pervasiveness, there has to be a way to restructure how MOSTI is going to ensure that all the initiatives done under that ministry, including that of Nano Malaysia, has to be pervasive enough to a point where all the ministries can actually enjoy the upliftment of your work and be implemented in what they do as their day job?
Yeah. Interestingly, spot on. Technology is a cross-cutting tool.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Cross-cutting tool is an enabler.
Mm.
So the key component about how you develop and validate and deploy technology is about understanding the sectoral needs, industrial need, community needs, environmental needs. So you have to address the triple bottom line: people, planet, profit, per se. And you have to see technology as a tool, but a very important tool, because without the tool, nothing can be built, manufactured, produced to address and to come up with the right solution addressing healthcare, green preservation, economic empowerment, and the overall development of the country per se. So in that context, I think years before, the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation, they have put in place a National Science Council, NSC. That is a congregation of all relevant ministries in a single table where we address all those cross-cutting issues to break barriers, to remove silos and whatnot. So anything that we do at Nano Malaysia level, in terms of our hydrogen technology, battery tech, we are able to harmonize with what the other ministries are doing. For example, if you look at NRECC, they're looking into achieving some of those climate change agenda, green agenda, preservation agenda. METI is looking into industrialization, trade, then Ministry of Economy looking into the overall macroeconomics of the country per se. But this congregation and creating the common lingo to ensure that we need to have mastery control of our local tech so that we're able to deploy, have some control, and reduce our dependency on imported technologies. This is where we're leading towards. I think the war cry now for us, spearheaded by MOSTI and the rest of the government, is technology sovereignty.
What would be some of the achievements that you have done for the past few years, and of course, more importantly, what are the shortcomings, the items that you couldn't achieve that needs to be re-looked at, whether or not it wasn't achieved because of market situation or because of poor implementation and execution, and perhaps a revisit into how we need to move forward when it comes to improving Nano Malaysia, utilising this 90 million ringgit budget moving forward?
Sure. I mean, it all started in our good work in the 11 Malaysia plan from 2016 to 2020, where we came up with some of those game-changing tech, which at that point of time, the market wasn't really ready for it. So we, at early run, we knew that the whole world is moving towards EV. We knew hydrogen economy is coming towards us in a big scale. And we knew for a fact the digital economy is creating a tsunami that you cannot deny. You have to just ride and surf the wave. So we started building, developing the building blocks of those components that will support the impending wave that's coming towards us. So let's start with digital economy. So a couple of years back, we launched the My Digital Blueprint. So 6 years ago, we decided to build the building blocks of digital component based on nanotech. Sensors, communication devices and whatnot. And fast forward this year, we are putting them together in an integrated manner through our 11 Malaysia Plan program, 12 Malaysia Plan program, we call Revolution, with a T at the back. The T at the back is purposely misspelled, which stands for Revolution, I-O-N-T, which means Internet of Nano Things. You are connecting nano devices, which we're deploying in various sectors, healthcare sector, agriculture, mobility, so on and so forth. So that translated into a higher confidence stemming from the Economic Planning Unit, from MOSTI and various other ministry agencies say, hey, this guy, they've done pretty well in anticipating, and now we're participating, and now we're looking into the future, and we're anticipating something bigger. That's the reason why you can see the translation of a bigger budget coming to us this year compared to last year.
But the shortcomings, the items that you couldn't execute.
Shortcomings, I mean, none of those are bits of roses. There are also thorns along the way, blood, sweat and tears. And there one particular project, for example, that I would like to share with you. We delve into battery tech.
Okay.
Typically, a battery tech requires about 10, 11 years for it to see the light of the day, from ideation, laboratory, all the way to the market.
Okay.
So we partnered with one SME, with one university per se. Yeah, we were so gung-ho about it. So under the National Graphene Nation Plan, which was captured under the 11 Malaysia Plan for 2016-2020, we invested. So we believe in the whole idea of the battery track. We infuse graphene to improve performance, energy density, lighter weight, so on and so forth, with the long-term goal about it will go into EV. Right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, at the end of the day, we decided, okay, the project kind of did not meet a certain spec. It was good in terms of performance, but not reliable. Mm. So we had to reconfigure the technology. And the 12 major plan, the underlying tech was good, but certain partners had to go.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, certain partners had to go. We had to find new configuration, new partners for way forward. And we have restructured the whole idea using the same battery tech with certain refinement, working with new partners and looking into pure manufacturing. We have established a new center of excellence at Meranti Park, not too far from Astro Awani. Mm. We call HEBAT, called Hydrogen Electric Vehicle Battery, HEBAT with a double T. We are able to translate that into a manufacturing-ready battery tech waiting for investor to come on board when it reaches a certain technology readiness level. So we've learned from that mistakes and make it better, and we are ready to move forward, participating in the green agenda as well.
So okay. But other than battery tech, will be some other areas that you were, I guess, missed shot and perhaps needs to be looked at?
Well, something that we have tread with caution, investment in healthcare.
Okay.
COVID-19 pretty much reminded us how important...
I was about to say that. This is the time to look at it very seriously.
How important it is to invest. We invested a long time ago in this particular technology with the support of another ministry, Ministry of Higher Education.
Oh, okay.
We are able to somehow congregate the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Higher Education, because they provide the researchers.
What we talked about, it's a cross-sectional tool.
You
need to collaborate.
So we have the researchers, we have the brains, we have the sectoral needs, and we have the technological idea. So what we do, we congregate them. The pockets of money came from KPT, Mohi. Mm. Then we send them over to IBM, San Jose, to work with the IBMers to work on this game-changing drug delivery system, which can also be pivoted for vaccine. Mm. So what it does is, it's a vesicle that carries nutraceutical, medicinal cargo that is able to address in a precise manner, targeted manner, any non-communicable diseases, including addressing COVID-19, for example, such. But we were a bit too early. Technology was good, but we were a bit too early for the market, so we had to allow it to incubate. And now we are revisiting that with a new set of mindset, new set of economic environment, new set of sectoral readiness for us to deploy. Too early back then, we were a bit too ahead of our curve. And now it's time for us to revisit, retool it, and understand that we can repurpose it and pivot it for applications such as vaccine. And interestingly enough, in the budget speed, is 50 million ringgit was afforded by under the budget to go into the national development of the nation's vaccine program.
Okay, so, in your opinion, is 50 million enough?
It's relatively small, but it is enough to create some pivoting component to get participation from various sectors.
Okay, so basically...
we're looking at a catalytical support.
That's the word.
That's the word, catalytical.
But we've seen how some of the sectors have seen these kind of so-called catalytical support being taken off, but it requires a lot of participation, particularly from the quadruple helix model, right? Yeah. And the issue here is that you need a lot of hand-holding, you need a lot of supervision, you need a lot of tweaking, a high level of supervision, so to speak. Yeah. Who's supposed to do that, coordinating
it's
role?
It's interesting that you mentioned quadruple helix. Our program is underpinned by that philosophy. Mm. So we have participation from us, government, university, industry and the community to understand the need statement and having all this congregated so-called teamwork to move in this
without
direction.
Without which it will not succeed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you made an opening statement to this particular session, you mentioned about Khazanah, 150 million, those are the funds that shall be matched for this purpose. Mm. Because healthcare is part of the ESG. Mm. You have the economic, governance, society, societal betterment. Mm-hmm. So this 50 million, for example, can be used to match. And when it reaches a certain maturity in terms of tech readiness level, market readiness level, these funds are ready to be complemented. So that's the whole idea, the mindset towards why we are pushing all these funds. Relatively small, but catalytical enough. It has that huge so-called leverage to get the bigger boys and girls to participate in a big way. The orchestration must be clear. In our space, we orchestrate the quadruple helix as such. So we can translate that idea into our friends. For example, under MOSI, we have people like NIBM, the National Institute for Biotech and Malaysia, to understand how we work. That model can be replicated. It is working thus far in the EV space, hydrogen space, and our previous endeavor, even in food agriculture. We replicate that. That's success. But we need to understand healthcare is a highly regulated sector, per se. So the hand-holding part is very critical. That's why we apply our venture builder model, end-to-end support, co-ideation, co-support, facilitation, market penetration. If you need be, if they need us for the long term, we form joint venture with the private sector. And this is the new version or new era of private-public partnership. As opposed to government pay first or they pay first, we go together.
Okay.
You win, I win kind of thing.
Early on, you alluded to the concept or the idea of technology sovereignty.
Yeah.
Let's talk more to that effect.
The idea stems from the concept of this perennial concept on energy security, food security, water security, the so-called classic nexus, the basic necessity that supports civilization moving forward, economic development per se. We realize that there is a certain shortcoming in security, the word security. Security means that you can secure a certain supply chain, a certain value chain, but you still have to network yourself, interface yourself with other local or external ecosystem.
Okay.
Our experience, I'll give you an example. In 2020, at the peak of the lockdown, at the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic, we wanted to build an electric bike. So we have our friend there. We're assisting an SME to build electric scooter to hit a certain economy of scale before they can hit the market where they are now. So we wanted to buy batteries from China. Okay, it is considered to be spot procurement at a certain volume. But they say, no, at this particular time, we are insularizing our battery supply chain. We are focusing on developing our local EV ecosystem. We are limiting or restricting export.
Okay.
So we realized that, hey.
That sounds like protectionism, if you ask me.
Yes, but hey, Malaysia is vulnerable for this because we are also serious about moving forward in terms of pushing our EV agenda. Low carbon mobility, and we have this shortage of supply. It's vulnerable. It's susceptible to all these vagaries. You know, people have this suddenly violent change of mind. Say that hey, we are going to stop supplying you X and Y and Z. So that extended the whole idea about sovereignty, that we need to have certain level of self-sufficiency level of certain components in Malaysia for us to really have control over our way forward. There's no point speaking about green agenda when you have little control of the tool. When you open up our market, for example.
Yeah, but the idea here is the same for anything, if you ask me. Self-sufficiency ratio of rice, for instance, is the same concept.
Yeah.
The ability for us to develop cars that are manufactured locally, doesn't matter who owns it, but generally speaking, domestically manufactured cars versus importing cars, CBU units maybe. These ideas are not foreign. The idea here is, of course, trying to leverage what is needed today in the market versus what kind of development that has been done. The way you speak, it's as if it's a, how should I put this, mutually exclusive. You can't develop it locally unless you don't, unless you stop importing.
No, I think it is quite the contrary as such. Another example, Joe Biden's administration, under their American Job First program,
okay,
he realized that he's pushing the EV agenda in America.
Yeah.
He realized that out of the 221 gigafactories in the world, 156 is located in China.
Okay.
And only 12 in the US.
Okay.
So that was an alarming figure that he realized that, okay, we need to do something about it. So he's now in the process of creating a network of gigafactory in the US to support their green mobility agenda as such. So that, in a way, indirectly inspired us as well to look into how Malaysia, if we are really, really serious about our so-called green agenda, energy transition, food security, whatnot, we need to have a certain level of sovereignty. You mentioned about rice and whatnot, self-sufficiency level. But the whole idea is about the tool, the tech tool. Because if you were to open the floodgates, getting people to come to Malaysia, for example, manufacturing CBU units, or sorry, CKDs, great, but the key components there are still imported. And you're creating more blue-collar workers instead of white-collar workers.
Yeah.
So the whole value chain
the
is not...
design
exactly,
is not there.
Exactly. So it's not future by design, it's future by chance. We just have... So we need to relook back.
Okay.
And furthermore, there needs to be a harmonization of KPIs between ministry. For example, okay, we have FDI coming on board. we have another ministry looking into innovation investment.
Yeah, you mean like MITI, for instance, yeah. Their KPI is to get foreign direct investments coming in.
Exactly. Well, mostly looking into investment and innovation in certain tech,
but
for example.
But that's the job of the quarterback, which is the Prime Minister's office, to coordinate these kind of various varying KPIs. Yeah.
So the new so-called investment philosophy for the country will look into how best we can harmonize FDI and DDI and getting the innovation picture to be pretty much part of that story and narrative to ensure that we have co-location, value chain be created by design, not by chance, we're creating more high-value jobs as such, supply chain being activated in Malaysia, and naturally all this economic activity will be created here in Malaysia. And that will translate into the tax sovereignty, certain elements that we have greater control in.
Sometimes some industries require global interconnectivity. The semiconductor is the best example to elucidate this. We've seen how to get one semiconductor chip up for market use requires up to 20 markets to be involved in that entire supply chain. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've seen how the supply chain was disrupted quite disruptively during the COVID. Mm. In fact, one would argue that it is still being hampered or hamstrung. Mm-hmm. But that has evolved into this whole China-US pseudo semiconductor war that we've seen right now.
The Chips Act, the US.
Where the US Congress has pumped in $50 billion funding into development of up to 2-nanometer chips in the US and 3-nanometer chips in the in China by the Chinese government. These kind of developments, it's so strange to hear or read this kind of information where countries have to pursue their own national interest, but at the same time, because of the nature of the technology industry, you can't run away from being interconnected globally. Do you feel that this whole strangeness of how the technology world is being set up might not necessarily bode well for some particular markets, especially one that like ours, where we're pretty small in the grand scheme of things? How do we stack up, or how do we tend to stand toe to toe with these kind of large players that have already been at it for some time, we're years behind?
When you mention about this strangeness in terms of what's going on, I believe it's a cyclical thing, because at some point there is this productization, manufacturing, and innovation life cycle.
Yeah.
So at some point when...
And then the utility of the product in the market for certain times before the next one comes along.
Exactly. So at that particular tail end of the current so-called product life cycle, before they embark on a new one, this is where the bigger economies will look into insularization of the economy and their tech as well.
Okay.
Because they need to be pivoted as a key
Why
player.
Why do you say insularization? That is protectionism, brother.
Well, there's a better word for it.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, but the thing is, you need to protect. You need to put food on the table. You need to make sure that jobs are created.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. But the thing is, the concept of creating jobs is to harmonize with your idea about we need to be connected. Globalization is still an agenda. It's a baseline. Right?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as fully insulated or insularized.
Yeah, walking by yourself.
Exactly. So therefore, while you create a job, let's say in the US or in Malaysia, Singapore, or whatnot, that job is also interconnected, because at some point, or co-created concomitantly, that job has an impact in the global supply chain. Going back to Malaysian example, you mentioned how small we are, how vulnerable we are. We need to participate in the critical component of the supply chain. Giving EV an example, we don't need to build a car. The US is going all the way in building
That's
the whole
fine.
Components.
They can go with their own agenda.
We shall not play that game.
We
should not replicate what Indonesia is trying to do.
If you're Bournemouth, you can still win against Manchester City, but you've got to play a
different game. Different game, different league and whatnot, but you can still win and be proud of it. So Malaysia, having competency in, let's say, battery and electronics, because Penang, right? So stemming from what Penang is, the hub of E&E in Malaysia, we look at the electronics side of battery and the chemistry of the battery. Because in Malaysia, for example, we have bauxite, aluminium. The world is now migrating away from lithium into aluminium ion battery because it's the way forward, and aluminium is the most recyclable metal known, at least in the world.
For now.
So that aluminium with a bit of nanotech, so-called sorcery or mastery, we're able to match the performance of lithium-ion batteries per se. So we have control over that. And that, once we have participated in that value chain, we can address regional market, not Malaysia. Too small, 31 million, 33 million, and maybe 5% interest in EV, maybe 1% interest in EV in terms of affordability. Way too small. We have to look into components, the concept of Intel inside, but here, battery inside. made in Malaysia, gigafactory in Malaysia, but export out to Indonesia. Because we have the brains. We have advantage of cerebral competency and advantage. We need to leverage on that. We call it capital economy.
Sorry to break this to you, but many of us are leaving.
Yeah.
So that brain competency that you speak of is fast depleting because of lack of, you know, remuneration, so to speak, lack of opportunity, lack of belief that the country has what it takes.
Well, I'm here.
Me too,
I'm here. It's up to
I'm sure you have friends who have left.
Yeah, yeah, but it's up to us to be the lightning rod and to attract. And what we do here may be small, nano-sized.
Doesn't
matter. Yeah, it's catalytical. We have to be like virus. We have to replicate. And that's what we do. Malaysia may be small, but we need to start from somewhere. And when we jump into this new era of hydrogen, battery, it's a level playing field. The whole world is still trying to understand.
Yeah, so now's the time.
Let's co-create with the bigger boys and girls, and we can attract. And at the same point, we can address this disparity in terms of pay, scale, and whatnot. This is the time.
Okay.
This is the time.
Final area of conversation that I want to have with you. We don't have much time left, but how far are we when it comes to leveraging the cerebral potential that we have to meet the requirements? How far are we from achieving your, by your definition, technology sovereignty that is sustainable and secure? And how far are we in terms of trying to realise that greater agenda of trying to work collectively and cohesively with all the other players in the sector, including intra-ministerial work rate?
Okay. When you look at brain drain, per se, we start with the cerebral competency and whatnot, okay. The fact of the matter, the reality out there is facing us, we are facing brain drain. Talents are leaving Malaysia per se. Let's take advantage of that. Malaysia diaspora. We are living in a borderless world. We can always align our activities such as research in Singapore and whatnot, Malaysians, but we are able to congregate those IPs.
Microsoft Teams, that's the only thing.
Exactly,
you need.
Exactly. You just
or
share
whatever, Zoom, whatever.
You share your results finding, your R&D outputs and whatnot, you convergence. Over digital platform, and you're able to say, okay, my idea, your idea, we cross license, we co-produce, you juggle this market, I look at this market, let's do that, collaborate per se, leverage on that, and we have this so-called virtual Malaysia, which is global. Let's think differently. Why I see that as a negative thing? While we are also attracting talent to Malaysia, we are also leveraging on those Malaysian diaspora elsewhere. Think differently.
Create
a new model of so-called cerebral competency or supremacy in that matter. If you look at where we are starting to crawl like 5 years ago and where we are now, per se, in terms of the EV space, I think give us about 3 years, 3 to 4 years, we should be a major player, at least in the ASEAN region. We can talk to our Indonesian counterpart.
You are so optimistic. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, because we know the tech. We know how the system works. I just got back from Thailand.
Okay.
Okay. So we knew how...
Me too. But for a different reason.
Yeah, for a different reason. Not for that.
Yeah.
But we understood how they are activating the EV ecosystem. Number one, every CPU imported, one CKD must be made in Thailand. Every CKD created in Thailand, 40% local component.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah. And you have these hard limit KPIs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And secondly, they're focusing on activating the so-called EV charging infrastructure in Thailand by incentivizing the commercial vehicles. Because if you invest in commercial vehicle, you also co-invest in your charging infrastructure, which has a spillover effect benefiting private cars union users. That's how they are accelerating. We can replicate. Why not?
Yeah. Fantastic. That was our conversation with Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad. I wish I had more time with you, but of course you can. I don't know, you work nearby, I guess, so we can get you here a lot more often. He is the CEO of Nano Malaysia Berhad. If you've missed any part of this show, just head on to astroawani.com and look for more information there. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.